This is Thursday, the 17th of November, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, with Barack Obama's administration reaching its final weeks, the first major resignation of a player has been declared. VOA National Intelligence correspondent Jeff Selden is with us to talk about that. Democrats begin to draw the line between them and the Trump administration.
We're ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with Republicans, working with soon-to-be President Trump on issues where we agree. But we will go toe-to-toe against the president-elect whenever our values or the progress we've made is under assault.
That and more, all on today's International Edition. We start out with the resignation of the director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. He has resigned. Made the announcement as he appeared before the U.S. House Intelligence Committee.
I submitted my letter of resignation last night, which felt pretty good. I got 64 days left, and I think I'd have a hard time with my wife, anything past that.
We all understand that. It is unclear why Clapper resigned just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump takes office on January 20th. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden is here with us. Jeff, why Clapper? Why now? Why was he number one?
Well, this, in some ways, shouldn't be a surprise. For a while now, in one appearance back in September even, he said in about 4 months, about the time that the new president would be taking office, whoever it might have been, and at that point they, of course, didn't know, he said the only thing that he's going to be rolling out in the next 4 months was him. So he was anticipating stepping down at the end of the Obama administration, no matter who won the election. And his office, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, a spokesman has come out and reinforcing what he said in the soundbite we just heard, that he has 64 days left. He is filling out. He is going to serve his entire term. So it's not like he's abandoning the U.S. or he's leaving his post in the middle of what's proven to be a rocky transition. That said, there has been a history of not the warmest relationship between Clapper and one of the key advisors to the Trump campaign, the former DIA director, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. So that may have something to do with it. Obviously, he must have known it was going to create quite a stir with the media by announcing it in the way that he did. But the fact that he's stepping down, no surprise to anyone.
Also, you know, him mentioning his wife, I know he probably said it with a smile on his face. I didn't see it, but nevertheless, this job is tough. I mean, it's a 24-hour-a-day thing, isn't it?
It's an extremely difficult job when you think about it, because this post, as it is right now, Director of National Intelligence, basically, you're the point man. You're the leader in charge of all the U.S. intelligence agencies. And in a sense, you're the person responsible for coordinating all the activities of agencies that maybe are not on the same track for the purpose of connecting the dots so that something like the 9/11 terror attacks don't happen again, so that little indications here and there can be put together with other evidence so some sort of catastrophic attack does not fall through the cracks.
So what do you hear so far about what the Trump intelligence structure might be when he takes office?
Well, obviously, it'll be built on the same basic positions, the same structure that exists right now, which a lot of it codified by law. But what we're hearing from those close to the Trump campaign is that they're hoping for a new energy. And also, they're saying it's going to show a lot more resolve, whereas they felt that President Obama was more prone to try to talk and to try to deal. They're talking about a lot more action, maybe not using force as often as the Obama administration or even the Bush administration before President Obama did, but when force is used, using it with overwhelming power to make the point and to take out the enemy. So there are two tracks. Clearly, they're hoping for a new start. It's almost a rebuke to what they saw as the policies of the Obama administration. They're also not happy with what they saw as overreach and over-aggressiveness during the tenure of President George W. Bush, of course, overseeing the Iraq War.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent. As always, thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is denying reports of infighting within his transition team and claims via Twitter that a very organized process is taking place as he selects members of his cabinet. He's already placed New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Vice President-elect Mike Pence as head of his transition team. Former Congressman Mike Rogers, a top national security advisor, said he was leaving. Trump's been under fire for his choice of a chief White House strategist, and questions persist about the role of his three children and his son-in-law in the process. VOA's Latika Hoke has more.
United!
Students at Yale University walked out of classes on Wednesday to support undocumented peers. Protest organizers are calling for their schools to shelter people who may face deportation. In New York City, Trump's name was removed from three rental towers he once owned after 600 residents signed an online petition.
Once he started being very derogatory towards women, racist remarks, and just being in an overall total embarrassment, we knew that we did not feel safe with his name on the building.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio addressed citizens' concerns in an hour-long meeting with Trump.
He is a New Yorker. I do think he loves this city. But I thought it was very important for him to hear what people are feeling, and very important for him to hear what our experience has been.
De Blasio said he also questioned Trump about his selection of Steve Bannon as his chief advisor. Bannon has been linked with conservative alt-right groups that embrace and promote white nationalism. And as a media person, he has expressed views that many see as racist and misogynist. Some Republican lawmakers also have criticized Trump in the past, but they presented a united front on Wednesday. Democrats have started efforts to reinvigorate the party after the unexpected loss in the presidential election. Senator Charles Schumer, the new Senate minority leader, announced newly elected party leaders on Wednesday.
I can tell the American people this. We're ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with Republicans, working with soon-to-be President Trump on issues where we agree. But we will go toe-to-toe against the president-elect whenever our values or the progress we've made is under assault.
The new Congress will have a Republican majority in both chambers. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
We continue on International Edition with our social media segment with Andrew Palshesky, and I guess the whole political scene in the U.S. is still making all kinds of noise, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be making noise for months, if not years, to come. But as we've been talking about all this week, the divisions that we still face in the country, that's what we're seeing on social media today, some divisions of opinion. We start with
stories. We always see divisions of opinion. That's exactly what it's all about.
Well,
right?
Today it's, you know, the three trends. I'm going to highlight the divisions of opinion in these. You could do that basically any day, as we've said. But we'll start with James Clapper, as our colleague Jeff Seldon was talking about as he submitted his resignation. We see a lot of people on social media saying, look, it's the draining of the swamp. Donald Trump's refrain for the past couple, last couple weeks of the campaign was drain the swamp, get rid of the corruption and the old guard in Washington. So half the people saying, oh, it's the draining of the swamp. Another half saying, no, he's fleeing a Trump administration. He wants to get out of there before Donald Trump becomes president. So you're seeing that back and forth and divide analysis of why James Clapper is leaving. And then we have Hillary Clinton last night speaking at the Children's Defense Fund dinner here in Washington, D.C. She comes out and she's not wearing much makeup, if any at all. Her hair isn't done up. And a lot of people saying that it's a very powerful statement, that she doesn't have to be made up, that she's just going out there and she's speaking from her heart about these issues, and it was very powerful. And then you have folks saying, well, she looks tired, she looks worn down, worn out, a lot of those claims, which people are saying are sexist. They wouldn't say those things about a man.
I was going to say, what if it was a guy talking?
Exactly, right. And that's the divide, too. They're saying that that she's facing sexism even after this presidential campaign. And then our favorite topic that we've been talking about all week, and we'll continue to talk about for weeks to come, fake versus real news on social media and how that influenced people in the election. BuzzFeed has a report out today that said fake election news actually outperformed real news in terms of social engagement. So more
sure,
people,
numbers. That's all they're talking about is numbers. That's insane.
Are clicking on and interacting with, liking, commenting, sharing on the fake news than they are with the real news.
So what?
Well,
what does that mean? That means people are reacting to things that are more exciting, even if they're to lie, even if it's hurting this country. Does anybody have a moral compass anymore?
Well, they're reacting to it and they're sharing it as though it's real news, and that's the real trouble. And this is, again, as we've said all week, the issue that we're going to have to face and look at for weeks, months, years to come, how social media tackles this issue.
Well, somebody's going to have to put a clamp down on it. Somebody somehow is going to have to do it, whether it's the traditional media that does it, which everybody hates now for certain reasons, or it shouldn't be the government, but who knows what's going
to
happen.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how, especially how the social media companies react, because they're getting a lot of scrutiny about how they're facing off with this. But again, that divide, then you have people saying it's an infringement on free speech. So we're going to see, like I said, this debate continue on and on and on.
Well, you know, it's not like similar things have not happened in the past, and we've gotten by that, as we will get by everything, hopefully.
We keep our fingers crossed. We most certainly will. I have no doubt.
Andrew, thanks a lot. Andrew Palczewski, do your identity thing here. Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at APAL. You can find Ira at VOA Melman, and you can find the show at VOA_IE.
I need him to tell me that. This is International.
Happy to help.
Thanks. Among the top stories in the world, the head of intelligence says he will leave the Obama administration. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe expected to highlight the importance of the security alliance between his country and the U.S. as he meets with President-elect Donald Trump today. The U.S. president meets with his German counterpart. The head of the U.S. Central Bank says that the country's improving economy could see an interest rate increase relatively soon. And after Russia's decision to leave the International Criminal Court, a Philippines withdrawal might follow. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the medical journal Molecular Psychiatry suggests that overindulging on a lot of high-fat foods as a youngster could harm a person's cognitive functions as an adult. It's no secret that children and teens love to eat junk food. Eating high-fat foods over a long period of time can lead not only to problems such as obesity and possibly damage young and still developing brains, but new research is showing that eating a lot of fatty foods during adolescence may impact the brain in adulthood. The findings were made after researchers compared the brains of young and adult mice who were fed either high-fat or normal diets. The first signs of impaired cognitive functions of young mice who ate a high-fat diet started to show after only 4 weeks and before they even started to show a weight gain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. As Russian and Syrian government forces resume air attacks on Aleppo, there are growing fears now among Syrian rebels that they may lose the support of the United States once President-elect Donald Trump takes office in January. Across the Middle East, rival powers are trying to digest the implications of Trump's election victory for the region, which remains beset by conflict in Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and Libya. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Russian jets take off from the aircraft carrier Admiral Kuznetsov to launch airstrikes on rebel-held Aleppo, Syria. Moscow said it was the first time in Russian naval history that its single aircraft carrier has been involved in combat actions. The United States accuses Russia and its Syrian government allies of causing mass civilian deaths. But President-elect Donald Trump signaled a softened tone during his election campaign, and that could herald a change of policy, says Jane Kinnenmont of London Policy Institute, Chatham House.
Trump has been relatively positive about Russia under Vladimir Putin and Russia's role in Syria as a supposed force against ISIS.
That has raised fears the Trump administration may withdraw support for Sunni rebel fighters, handing a big advantage to the Syrian government and its Shiite backers in Iran. Conversely, Trump's pledge to tear up the nuclear deal struck between Iran and the West, which saw sanctions dropped in return for limits on nuclear activity, has gained him some support among Sunni regional powers. Trump has described the agreement as disastrous and the worst deal ever negotiated.
Obama has been really disliked by Gulf elites, most of all because of the deal with Iran. They regard him as having been soft and naive on Iran. And the more hawkish language that Donald Trump has used has gone down well but there is complete uncertainty about what it means in practice.
Wednesday, French President François Hollande warned Trump against reneging on the nuclear deal with Iran.
Mais je sais que là, il y a un principe de réalité.
He said the deal gives guarantees and that the absence of an agreement would be very serious. There are, as yet, few guarantees over the direction of Trump's future foreign policy. Researcher Jane Kinnemont of Chatham House predicts his approach will mark a sharp contrast to that of Barack Obama.
Trump has for years given the impression that he respects the strongman model of government, whether that's in China or in Russia, and that he has seen dictators in the Middle East as at least a force against terrorism.
With conflicts raging from Yemen to Libya, analysts say the Middle East will likely provide the first test for Trump's promised strategic reset of US foreign policy. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington on VOA. India and Pakistan may be at odds, but South Asian immigrants to the United States often find they have a lot in common. One example is provided by an Indian and a Pakistani in the Texas city of Houston, who've opened a new restaurant in one of the city's trendy neighborhoods that also appeals to the palate of Texas natives. Borrowing the name of an old children's game, they call it Cowboys and Indians. VOA's Greg Flakes has the story from Houston.
Before opening their restaurant, owners Imran Khan and Husnian Basir held some free tasting events for local residents to get their feedback.
I would eat that every day. I really would. I love that food.
Too bland or anything like that? Good.
Perfect.
Good.
This place was a gas station in 1931, and it retains some of that look still. It's in the popular Montrose area near downtown Houston, where younger diners in particular seek variety and distinction in cuisine. The menu combination reflects the culinary tastes of the owners.
We're American, you know, and we're Texan, you know, but at the same time, we do have that Indian background that, you know, we want to be able to share with everyone else in the community. I love a good burger, and I love, you know, some, you know,
chicken fried steak,
things like that. You know,
mashed potatoes with country gravy and okra and cornbread.
The two Texans, by way of South Asia, have been friends for years and see themselves far removed from discord back in their birth countries.
In the country that we're from, yes, they're having problems, but over here it's a little different, you know.
They share a culture and a cuisine, as well as a vision for their restaurant that includes building a patio on the roof with its partial view of Houston's skyline.
People can come out, hang out, be able to have a great skyline view of downtown.
Also, 4th of July, New Year's Eve, it's got fireworks you can see from here.
Opening any business involves risk, but they're confident in their plan.
And in the end, what's important is the food. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Houston.
Well, as we've been talking, President Obama, along with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, have been holding a press conference in Berlin, and part of it dealt with Russia. The U.S. President, Barack Obama, says he hopes President-elect Donald Trump will stand up to Russia when it deviates from U.S. values and international norms.
On issues like Ukraine, on issues like Syria, we've had very significant differences. And my hope is that the president-elect coming in takes a similarly constructive approach finding areas where we can cooperate with Russia, where our values and interests align, but that the president-elect also is willing to stand up to Russia where they are deviating from our values and international norms.
Obama says he does not expect Trump to follow the Obama administration's blueprint or its approach, but also hopes that he won't simply walk away from the administration's efforts. The president also says Trump's commitment to NATO is quite important. And the conference moves on. Make sure you stay with us here at VOA for full coverage of that through our newscast and online and on our social media platforms. And then this story comes from New York City. You don't see this or hear about this every day, so I thought it was quite important and quite interesting. The Coast Guard now says it has received reports of a whale swimming around near the Statue of Liberty. Petty Officer Frank Ianzano Simmons says the whale was spotted around 8 this morning near Liberty Island in New York Harbor. Coast Guard put out an advisory telling mariners to watch out and avoid contact with the whale. Boats of all sizes frequent the area, including Staten Island ferries and cargo vessels. Wasn't clear what kind of whale it was swimming around outside of New York City. That was a whale of a story. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter, if you will, at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Diane Gao, engineer, Seldom Jang, and I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
4 weeks into the military offensive to liberate Mosul from its ISIL occupiers, the combined Iraqi and Kurdish forces have gained a toehold on the outskirts of the city and are pushing in. As they advance, they meet groups of civilians making their way out of the city and away from the fighting, away from brutal ISIL fighters who booby-trap the city and are more likely to shoot at civilians than to aim at opposing troops. But for every civilian fleeing the city, the invading forces encounter countless more who remain hunkered down in their homes. Indeed, conditions within the city are dire, with acute shortages of food, medicines, and daily necessities. So delivery of humanitarian aid and care for Mosul's denizens is an important part of the operation. Because this operation has been long in planning, aid workers had pre-positioned their supplies to ease delivery. We've been actively working with our partners on the ground, that's the UN and the international NGOs, to stand ready to provide emergency shelter, food, water, sanitation, and hygiene services, as well as health support. We're trying to stay ahead of the crisis, which we've been able to do, said a senior administration official during a teleconference. There have been about 3.2 million people displaced from their homes since 2014, and 10 million people in need of assistance. That equates to somewhere around one-third of the Iraqi total population. And the United States has been there supporting the Iraqi people with more than $1.1 billion in humanitarian aid since 2014. Over the summer, we've helped the international community secure pledges for $2 billion as it relates to the Mosul operation, the official said. Aid workers have pre-positioned enough food supplies for about 1.25 million people and have enough in the pipeline and ready for delivery to feed 2.3 million. They are also set to deliver shelter, water, sanitation, health care, and protection. So far, about 34,000 civilians have fled the city of Mosul since the fighting began over 3 weeks ago. But the battle for Mosul has barely begun, and aid workers are ready to deliver supplies to the entire city if necessary.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.